Welcome all and welcome to another episode of the Paranormal Patriot here in October, which again is Paranormal Month for the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me this week. As always, wearing the tinfoil hat, my name is Tom Velasquez. The show this week, I'm really excited about because it is one I've wanted to do for ages. And honestly, I've wanted to do this subject since Mysteries of Michigan began. For those of you who are new to the show, the Paranormal Patriot started off as just a little itty-bitty podcast called Mysteries of Michigan. That was back in 2013, and it has evolved into what we have today. But since the beginning, I've always wanted to do this show, and it never really worked out. Every time I'd go to do one, something would happen where I'd change the focus or change the subject matter. Today, all that ends. Today, we will be talking about the granddaddy of all UFO encounters. Now, there are some out there that say, oh, hold on, this has been proven by the government. This is not what you think it is. But there are ample witnesses. There are numerous witnesses. There is a plethora of evidence to state that while it may not necessarily be a UFO, the government was hiding what they found. They knew what they found was something that they did not want the public to know, and they covered it up. And they covered it up for 30, 40 years. Because, and we're going to go back into the history of this, because everybody thinks that, oh, this has been going on since 1947. It really hasn't. The history behind this is incredible. It is just a chance luck. If what happened 30, 40 years after the actual encounter, if just a small chain of events never occurred, we would never know about Roswell. It would have been stuck into the annals of time, hidden in the government archives, never to be spoke of again. A certain person that we will discuss brought this to light in 1978. We're going to hear exactly what happened. Then we're going to get into the details and what exactly happened on the night that the government became involved in the Roswell encounter. We will get that. Then we will go over the evidence and what the major players, what they saw, what they witnessed, what they encountered, what they touched physically with their own two hands. Then we're going to hear about what the government originally said and then what they said after and how soon their story changed. It's going to be an incredible show with a lot of information that you may or may not have heard, but you haven't heard it on the Paranormal Patriot. So sit back, relax, open that mind. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you will hear about the Roswell UFO crash. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back.
Have you thought about getting into crypto? Are you oblivious on where to start or even what to do? Hit up the Bitcoin pro Jay Motley to help you get started on the path to a better financial situation for free. No hidden fees, no charges, just guidance. Go to bitcoinpro.unitedinvestors.group and get started today. Again, that's bitcoinpro.unitedinvestors.group. And tell them W sent you.
they have no traction. I'm running in place, don't know what I'm running from. It didn't have a human face, was once getting candy, but now I'm on the run. Slipping in the mud, moon is bright as the sun. I trip on a tombstone and glance over my shoulder. This beast is getting closer, don't think I'm getting older. It's getting hard to breathe, heart is beating out my chest. This beast is slowly walking to me, toying with his conquest.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
So what you just listened to there, that was the original, essentially breaking news broadcast, releasing to the world that a UFO crashed and was recovered by the American government in 1947. But let's start at the beginning. What really happened in Roswell? There are many, many theories, ideas of what happened in June, July of 1947 in Roswell, New Mexico. Here are the facts. Fact number one, something fell from the sky in Roswell, New Mexico. Fact number two, the United States Army came out, cordoned off the area, and took every single piece of debris. Fact number three, that debris was taken to the Roswell facility, the Army or the Air Force facility, and placed in Hangar 17. Then after that, everything gets a little sketchy. Then we have to rely on eyewitness accounts. We have to rely on what the government said. More importantly, what I, as a ufologist, when I look at this case, I look at it as the witnesses. There are too many witnesses that are saying the exact same thing for me to think, yeah, that's really not. This could be exactly what the government's saying it is. But before we get into that, we need to find out the events that took place. So, contrary to popular belief, most people believe that the Roswell incident, which has been called nowadays, most people believe that the events took place around July 3rd or 4th of 1947. Well, the actual incident, it began June 24th of 1947. Now, this is when pilot Kenneth Arnold was flying over the Cascade Mountains of Washington State. He was hoping to search for a crashed military aircraft. What he saw changed the world. He saw nine crescent-shaped objects flying in formation at a height of around 10,000 feet. The estimated speed was approximately 1,200 miles an hour, which was seemingly impossible at that time. Arnold described the jerky movements of the object as being like a saucer would be if you skipped it over the water. The media got a hold of the story, coined the term flying saucer, and we now have the UFO phenomena that we have today. But this wasn't the first UFO sighting of what we call, not or used to call, UFOs. Now they're called UAPs. They'll always be UFOs to me. But it was the first to capture the public imagination. And it was the first that was made headlines across the world. Now, more and more reports of these objects were received, suggesting that these sightings were commonplace, but most, they've gone completely unreported until the 1947 Kenneth Arnold sighting. So in the summer of 1947, the media coined the term the Summer of the Saucers. And as it progressed, the media coverage intensified to a point of near hysteria until matters came to a head and it seemed the mystery might be resolved. On July 7th, a local rancher named Mac Brazel contacted the sheriff from Roswell to say he'd discovered strange debris spread over his ranch. He'd found it days earlier, but hadn't thought much about it until he started to hear the stories about the flying saucers and thought, well, I might want to have somebody look into this. Thinking there might be a connection and guessing something might have crashed during a recent storm, he alerted the authorities. So at this point, Mac Brazel picked up some little pieces of debris, nothing major, and he took them to the sheriff. The sheriff took one look at them, and he had to contact the nearby Army Air Base. At that point, intelligence officer Jesse Marcel went to the crash site with Mac Brazel and recovered more debris. Now, this next part is huge. I want you to pay very close attention to what I'm going to say here. The military base's public information officer, Walter Hout, worked with the local journalist to release a Newswire report about the event. What they released was not viewed by the government. It was not viewed by the higher up in the Army. This is what they found, according to Walter Hout. The press release, I'm going to give it to you verbatim, word for word. I want you to listen to this because it's very important. It goes like this. The many rumors regarding the flying disc became a reality yesterday when the intelligence office of the 509th Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force, Roswell Air Army Field, was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers and the sheriff's office of Chavez County. The flying object landed on a ranch near Roswell sometime last week. Not having phone facilities, the rancher stored the disc until such a time as he was able to contact the sheriff's office, who in turn notified Major Jesse A. Marcel of the 509th Bomb Group Intelligence Office. Action was immediately taken, and the disc was picked up at the rancher's home. It was inspected at the Roswell Army Airfield and subsequently loaned by Major Marcel to higher headquarters. That is the actual press release. This press release was issued by trained military professionals, many of whom just got back from hell on earth serving in World War II. What this tells me is these people who witnessed what was found on Rancher Mac Brazel's ranch, they believed it to be a flying saucer. They believed it to be an extraterrestrial craft. In the military, I've never been in the military, but I know many people that have. You don't just go ahead and make this stuff up. If you're going to issue a press release, if you are going to go to the higher-ups and tell them something, it better be 100% legit. It can't be, yeah, we found a flying saucer. No, it's not a flying saucer. They had to have been 150% sure that what they were releasing to the public, the press release they were releasing, they knew. They knew that they had a craft. So as expected, the news of this recovery, it sent shockwaves around the world. Its iconic front page headline of the local Roswell Daily Record, that is what it's best known for. If you have been involved in ufology at any time in your life, you know the headline. The headline read, RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. That's the headline from the Roswell Daily Record on July 8th, 1947, for the whole world to see. As you can imagine, hysteria was all over the world. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, they have it. They have a UFO. And that was the story. That there was no, well, it's swamp gas, well, it's a hot air balloon. That was the story. And then, in less than 24 hours, in a complete reversal of their position regarding the Roswell debris discovery, the United States military said a mistake had been made and that the quote-unquote flying saucer was a crashed weather balloon. Now, the Roswell Daily Record printed a follow-up story that read, General Ramey empties Roswell's saucer. Now, General Roger Ramey was the commander of the 8th Air Force, to whose Fort Worth headquarters the debris had been flown. Now, to further their claim that this was just nothing but a weather balloon, a series of photos were published showing Ramey, Jesse Marcel, and other military personnel holding some of the debris. Now, sure enough, it looked pretty uninspiring and was entirely consistent with the quote-unquote tinfoil mentioned by the military in their explanation. Now, nowadays, with the 24/7 news cycle, the internet, social media, and an activist community of UFO researchers, such a claim, hey, we have a disc, followed by such an about turn, would no doubt cause controversy and conspiracy theories would just go crazy on a massive scale. This is especially true given that the 509th Bomb Group was the only atomic bomb capable squadron anywhere in the world at the time. It's hard to imagine that these elite personnel, many of whom were familiar with weather balloons, would be fooled in this way. But let's not forget, this is 1947 America. Post-war America was very different than America from today. And when I say that, I mean it was calmer, more trusting of authority. The weather balloon explanation was almost universally believed. Now, interest in UFOs and flying saucers went from strength to strength. Roswell disappeared from the narrative. In my opinion, it was by design. And what I mean by that comment is just because Roswell was, oh my God, it's UFO, oh, it's a weather balloon. I think the government was thinking, okay, this will just kill. This will stop all this UFO nonsense. It didn't. Even though they disproved, quote-unquote, disproved Roswell, UFO sightings still came in. People were still seeing things they couldn't understand. People were now really starting to report them. But it's strange that even though UFO sightings continued to rise and UFO encounters and alien encounters continued to skyrocket, Roswell, it just disappeared without a trace. And then now we come to the real Roswell UFO crash, the real story of the Roswell UFO crash, because from 1947 to 1978, there was no thought, no recollection, no worries about Roswell. But then again, in 1978, nuclear physicist turned ufologist Stanton Friedman, he became involved. For those of you who don't know who Stanton Friedman is, we lost Stanton Friedman just recently, and it is a huge loss to the UFO community. This man was the most intelligent, the most unbiased. I mean, he just, if it wasn't a UFO, he told you. But he was a ufologist, and he was a smart man. He was, extremely intelligent. And he was an icon in the UFO community. Well, Stanton Friedman in 1978, he was tipped off that a retired military man had an interesting story to tell. That military man? Well, it was none other than Jesse Marcel. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you are going to hear what Jesse Marcel told Stanton Friedman. Sit back, relax, open that mind. I will be right back.
Hello, and welcome to the Ohio Hauntings and Legends podcast. We will be taking you to places you have never dreamt of going. Hundreds, if not thousands, of haunted and abandoned locations. We will visit with the paranormal from your nightmares and try to understand the unexplained. Ohio alone has 88 counties within our state, and virtually each one of those counties has a story to tell. Ohio's history is bloodstained throughout its history. We will be covering more than just Ohio. We will cover the state you live in, the country. Trust me. There are thrills, chills, and we are upping the fright factor with each new stop we make. We will be traveling the world, the globe, looking for the strange, the mysterious, and the frightening. Mostly, we will find the unexplainable. Many of these episodes are genuine. Others are legend or hearsay. Believe those that you choose, or believe in none. It is your choice. Just get comfortable. sit back, dim the lights, and listen.
You down, I got it now. Baby, something about you got me around. We should settle down. There's no reason to wait.
So, Roswell was non-existent from 1947 to 1978. Stanton Friedman just came into a gold mine. He had a former military man that wanted to talk about a disc that had crashed in the Roswell area. And listen, at the time in 1978, nobody knew about this. Stanton Friedman didn't know what to think, but he's like, well, I've got to look into this. And then found out that the man that wants to talk was the actual man that ran the recovery process. He had the material in his hands. Jesse Marcel, who was essentially on his deathbed, he told Friedman that the weather balloon explanation had been a cover story and that the photos had been staged, with the weather balloon debris being substituted for the real wreckage. He claimed that everyone involved in the retrieval was clear that the object had indeed been an extraterrestrial spaceship. Now, Jesse Marcel, he went on to tell Stanton Friedman that he took little pieces of metal home, and his son, Jesse Marcel Jr., he woke them up in the middle of the night, him and his wife. They went out, it was in the kitchen, and he had this metal. It was just like balsa wood thin, very light metal, and he would take it in his hand. It was like a little square piece of metal, essentially, and he'd just crush it like tinfoil, and then open his hand, and the metal would regain its shape, and it would not have any wrinkles, any defects in it. It was essentially impervious to any type of damage, I guess. But, and that's where some of the people that don't agree with the Roswell incident were saying, well, wait a minute, whoa, if this metal is impervious to damage, you crush it like tinfoil and you open your hand and it just folds right back out without any semblance of damage, then how did this craft crash? Why is there debris? Why wouldn't it stick together? Well, what we don't know is what caused this crash to happen and how fast that this craft hit the ground. I mean, I don't care how strong of a metal, how impervious to damage metal is. If you start flying along at 1,200 miles an hour, let's just say 1,200 miles an hour, and you hit the ground, there's going to be damage to that craft. Again, this is my human mind, but that's what I believe. So over the next few years, researchers dug deeper into the mystery. They tracked down many of the key players that were there that night, either at the crash site or they were working at the RAAF airfield. They got a hold of these people, and these people kept telling them the same story that Jesse Marcel was telling Stanton Friedman. Yes, what was brought in, we've never seen that before. What they took pictures of was not what was recovered. And then the story gets even crazier, because now the story, when they started going back and talking to these witnesses, they found out that they found bodies. They found bodies which were originally they thought they were children. And one of the morticians in the Roswell area, he was on record as stating that the military called him in the middle of the night, said, hey, we need three child-sized coffins. Can you provide those? And he did. And one of his buddies who worked in the military at that base said, yeah, they're not for children. We captured a disc. This was before the release came out. We captured a disc. There were bodies. These are aliens. They're about 3 to 3.5 feet tall. So I want to go back and I want to talk to you about 1978 for a minute. Because in 1978, nobody knew about Roswell until Stanton Friedman got in contact with Jesse Marcel. Now, everybody seems to want to knock on Jesse Marcel saying, oh, he's just looking for his 15 minutes of fame. Well, this man, Jesse Marcel, is on his deathbed. That is not a man who's looking for his 15 minutes of fame. Anyone that's on their deathbed is looking to clear their conscience. And this man, that's exactly what he did. He said, this is not what happened. The footage, the photos that you saw in the paper of me holding tinfoil, that's not what I took home that night. That is not what we recovered. What we recovered, everybody knew, was an extraterrestrial craft. The story that Jesse Marcel is just looking for fame, it doesn't fly. Because if you're on your deathbed, that's the last thing you are looking for is fame. So again, in 1978, nobody knew about this UFO crash. Stanton Friedman had all this information, and then he started to research it, and other ufologists started to research it, and it became something of a phenomena in the ufology circles in the late 80s or mid to late 80s, and then in the 90s, it absolutely exploded because it became mainstream. Everybody was talking about this UFO phenomenon to the point that the government had to go and say, hey, okay, we're going to do another research on this. We're going to do another evaluation on this. And what they did is it was a sham. They basically came out and said, well, yeah, it really wasn't a weather balloon because nobody really believed that. Doing the research and actually following up on witness accounts, and it was a sham of a story. The government knew it. So what they said is, oh, well, those are test dummies that they found. That was a test plane, test whatever, test. It was a military test that we had test dummies in there. And when it crashed, the test dummies burned, and it made them look like aliens. And that is what the media went with. But again, it didn't suffice to the public. The public could sense already, right from the get-go, that no, that's not what happened. These are not test dummies. They're not going to call a mortician or a coroner and say, hey, we need 3 child-sized caskets for a test dummy. They're not going to have the nurses who were treating one of the aliens that survived, according to her story. She was treating one of the aliens that survived. And apparently this alien survived for quite a while. They took the debris to Hangar 17 at the RAAF airfield. From there, it was transferred to Fort Worth, to General Ramey, and from there to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. The alien was alive during this whole thing and died years later, apparently. That's the story. That's what we're going with right now. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. However, the topic of Roswell in the 90s and even now, it's just overwhelming the amount of information that people are wanting to hear about Roswell. People want to know, hey, did a UFO crash in Roswell? There's rumors that it wasn't just one UFO. There's rumors that it could have possibly been 2 UFOs colliding. Now, my personal theory, if you are traveling either interdimensional or interstellar, if you don't have a crash avoidance system installed at that point, you have no business traveling through the stars or through dimensions. But the story continued to have legs. It wouldn't die. And then in 1997, retired United States Army Colonel Philip Corso, with the help of William Burns, they published the tell-all memoir, and this was a year before Philip Corso's death, so in a sense, it's another deathbed confession. They produced the book The Day After Roswell, and basically what it entails is what happened after the UFO crash in Roswell. But on top of that, it goes into the fact that the government reverse engineered this crashed disc. And what they got out of that disc was they got technology. They had integrated circuits. They had fiber optics. We never knew about any of this. They had Velcro. Velcro was not even thought of, was not invented until after the UFO crash. According to Philip Corso, the way that these aliens' body suits were adhered to them is by Velcro. Then we have, again, the integrated circuits. We have fiber optics. Remember, we had no clue. I mean, think about it. Fiber optics is essentially sending a signal through glass, through light, light and glass. In the 1940s, we had no idea how to do that. Not even close. So there are things that, listen, let's go off, well, kind of off topic, but anybody remember, anybody see the movie Independence Day? And this is what Hollywood does. They give us little tidbits of information in their movies. And they expect us to think, oh yeah, it's just a movie. But what they're doing is they're giving us actual facts. In the movie Independence Day, they talk about retrieving a crashed saucer, a crashed UFO. And they talk about reverse engineering it. And they talk about all the technological advances that we received from this crashed UFO. And it's not, we may think it's just Hollywood, it's just a good story. But how many of these good stories are based on actual events? Did we reverse engineer a UFO? Do we have technology from UFOs? That is to be seen. I firmly believe that's the case. We have advanced. I mean, you look at the course of human history. In the course of human history, it goes stagnant. And all of a sudden, bam, we have a technological explosion. And then we go stagnant. And then there's a new one. Now, in the ancient times, you know, the medieval times, or BC times, a lot of people attribute that to the quote-unquote gods from the sky coming down and in just giving us this technology to advance our race. Well, now they're attributing it to the fact that we have their craft. Listen, 1969, we went to the moon. They're telling us that through the technology of less than a TI-83, a Texas Instrument TI-83 calculator, we were able to go to the moon, land on the moon, jump off the moon, basically rocket off the moon, and go back to the Earth on a TI-83. Now listen, TI-83s are great. I've got one for sale if anybody wants one. But these things, they're just calculators. And this was the technology. You look at what we went to the moon on. It doesn't make sense. There's no way we could have got there unless we had secret technology that could get us there and get it back. And if that's the case, where did it come from? It came from Roswell. That is the birthplace of the boom that we have in our technology. You look at where we were in 1900, where were we in 1940? And then you look at where we were in 1960, 1950, 1960, and where we are now. This is not the natural progression of human intelligence. This was helped. We were helped in any way, shape, and form, and I truly believe it is from extraterrestrials. So, if you want my opinion, I 150% believe that Roswell happened, that Roswell was a UFO crash. I believe that the government covered up what they found. I believe that Jesse Marcel was a scapegoat. I mean, because honestly, Jesse Marcel he didn't look good. He's out there going, hey, look at this. This is just a weather balloon. Even though Walter Haut, our press release guy, said, hey, this is a UFO. It makes it look bad. And Again, back in 1947 America, we believed our government. Our government just got us through World War II. We won. So everybody trusted the government. The government wouldn't be bad. The government wouldn't be out against us. Yeah, they were. And they were out there telling everybody, hey, this is just a weather balloon. Yeah, we have the only atomic bomb division in the country the only atomic bomb division group in the country is retrieving the debris, and they don't know what a weather balloon looks like. You do that today and TikTok and Facebook and Twitter, we are all on top of it. And that's the difference between today and back in 1947. Back in 1947, they didn't know any better. Yeah, our government says it's just a weather balloon. We'll go with that. Let's move on. Today? Oh, no. We would be all over that. We would be calling you out. We would be doing, where's the fact checkers on that one? I mean, literally, that's how we would be. So that in a nutshell is the story of Roswell. And when I say in a nutshell, we could go weeks on this. But I wanted to just kind of consolidate it for this episode. Do your research. Listen and find out what the witnesses witnessed and what they had to say. Read Philip Corso's The Day After Roswell book. It's very, very intriguing. Roswell, it will always be the big one until we actually have confirmation that UFOs exist. Either they're landing in Washington or there is a sighting that nobody can deny. Until then, Roswell is the granddaddy of all UFO encounters because it went unknown for over 30 years. Nobody knew about Roswell. The government had just pushed that down below any view of the public. Ufologists didn't even know about this until 1978 when Stanton Friedman was contacted by Jesse Marcel. And that is when Roswell just exploded. So you look at the early 80s, mid to late 80s, that's when the research came in. Ufologists were conducting research, finding out, hey, did this actually happen? Is there some truth to this? And then when the 90s hit and they had all their interviews, they talked to all the witnesses. It's a very compelling story because every witness is witnessing the same thing. And they're telling everybody the same thing that happened. Jesse Marcel, who was there, who held the material, is telling everybody, that's not the pictures you see of me holding that tinfoil weather balloon. That's not what we recovered. Jesse Marcel Jr. is out to basically save his father's name, saying he's not crazy. I saw it. He would crumple this piece of metal, this balsa wood thin piece of metal, and it would unfold on itself, and it was essentially indestructible. That's where we are. And this is where you come in. Do your research. Read that book, The Day After Roswell by Philip Corso. I've read it about four times, and every time I love the book. So right now, I don't even know what else to say. I'm just gonna put it out there. Do your research. If you've not looked into the Roswell UFO crash, if you've just taken the media and the government's facade that, yeah, there was nothing there to see, look into it. Read Philip Corso's book. It is an amazing read. You will be dumbfounded by the amount of technology we have received from just this one UFO crash. Alrighty, that'll be the show this week. I appreciate everybody listening. I hope you truly enjoyed this show. We will be back next week. We'll be bringing you more paranormal, more stories that you want to hear this time of year. Thank you for listening. My name is Tom Velasquez. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. I'll talk to you next week.
It's a dark, scary night, and I'm going trick-or-treating. It's getting so damn cold, the rain is turning to sleet, and my bag is empty, so I gotta knock on some more doors. But I'm so damn wet, I'm getting cold right to the core. I walk up to the steps and give the door a couple knocks, and they open it up, and my bag